As believers in Jesus, we have lots of wonderful characteristics that should be present in our life and actually overflowing out of our life. And one of those is joy. In a movie theater, ain't a movie theater unless it's got popcorn. I wonder if we could say a believer is a believer when we've run out of joy. Joy is not just happiness. Happiness is based on happenings. Joy is something deeper. Joy comes to us as a gift from God. In fact, Jesus says this to us in John chapter 15. He says, I've told you these things so that you would be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. Catch that. If you're a follower of Christ, Jesus gives you his joy, and his joy should be overflowing out of our life. Now think about his joy. Like, what could that be? Right? His joy. And so I was kind of meditating this week on God, what is the joy that you give us? And these are some of the thoughts that I had. His joy that he experienced when, as the designer and the creator, came up with the idea of the walrus. Imagine God's joy in like coming up with the idea of this goofy creation, a walrus. Or imagine the joy that God experiences every day as he paints these incredible sunsets. Or think about the joy of Jesus, who was able to go to a young woman whose life had been caught in a spin cycle of meaningless sex and say to her broken, hurting life, listen, I've got water for you to drink that will satisfy, honey, that thirst in your soul. And once she experienced it, she found the joy she had been looking for, but in broke down boys, she found a real joy as she could walk and follow Jesus and sin no more. That's Jesus' joy. And he says, I give you that joy. And that joy should be overflowing in your life. But here's what I know. Here's what I've experienced, is that sometimes I can run out of joy. Even sometimes my joy can be stolen. And instead of navigating life with a healthy degree of joy that brings kind of a peaceful gladness to my life, I find myself grinding a little bit, and my cup is empty of joy, but all of a sudden it starts to fill with things like disappointment, dissatisfaction, a sullenness, a sourness, a bitterness comes over me, a fearfulness, a negative spirit, doubting, a lack of gratitude, complaining. Those things start to fill my cup that was once filled with joy. But again, there's a biblical offering. And the offering is from Jesus, that he wants to give us his joy. Let's look at that same verse, John 15. Here's another translation of it. Notice the continuation that is promised in this. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may, say this word with me, remain in you, and that your joy may be full. May that be that all of us can find a greater measure of joy today, a joy that actually remains with us. Now, what I've found is this. In order for it to remain with us, there's some things that we have to tend to in our life. And if we do, then that joy has a tendency to stick. But if we don't kind of maintain some of these things, that joy can dissipate rapidly. And so I want you to turn with me to Philippians chapter 1, and let's talk about renewing and remaining in joy. Philippians chapter 1, we're going to look at verses 12 through 18. This is a series that we started a few weeks ago, if you're new to us, and what we've learned about this letter in Philippians. as it started out as a thank you note. And the Apostle Paul sent this thank you note, and as he started writing his gratitude for a financial gift that they had sent to him, he starts to just kind of remember some of the things that has helped him navigate some of life's unexpected moments. And all of a sudden, this letter that was a thank you note all of a sudden turns into some sage advice about how to navigate life's twists and turns. Now, theologians look at Philippians and they call it the Rubik's Cube of Paul's writings, because it doesn't follow like the same kind of thread like some of his other letters do. They're more coherent in the way that they're communicated. Theologians call it the Rubik's Cube. It just kind of twists and turns all over the place. I think it's because as Paul was dictating the letter, like he did most of his letters, he's kind of thinking, he's, oh, let's tell him about this. And he's thinking, we got to tell him about that. And so the letter kind of takes these kind of, you know, hitchy kind of turns to it, because the apostle is remembering things that are helpful to us as we're navigating the unexpected. Now, as we focus in today on this idea of joy, let's go all the way to the end of the passage that we're going to read. Look at verse 18, the very end of it, and let's just kind of get to the end game. He says, I will rejoice and I will continue to rejoice. That's his commitment to kind of maintain this joyful posture. No matter what he goes through, I will rejoice and I will continue to rejoice. That's where we want to be. But to get there, we've got to scrub some of his words to see how we can renew and maintain that kind of joy. So now look back at verse 12. He says, I want you to know, my dear brothers and sisters, that everything that has happened to me has helped. The word in the Greek language is a word that literally means it really helps. It actually helps. Even some translations, if you're reading something different than the NLT that we're looking at, it will emphasize that. It'll say something like, it actually serves. It really helps to spread the good news. The word spread is the word for blazing a trail. It means to clear the way. So what's happened has really, really helped to clear the way for the gospel. Now notice in verse 12, he mentions everything that has happened. He says everything that's happened has brought about this. It really has helped and it's paved the way. Now we're uncertain if he means by like everything that's happened up until this point. And so we might look at a verse like 1 Corinthians 11, verses 24 through 28, which give us a snapshot of like some of the things that Paul has been through. And he says, like five different times, I've received 39 lashes, and three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Now, he's talking about this, not this. When you live in Colorado, you got to clarify these things, all right? Three times I was shipwrecked. Once I spent a whole night and day adrift at sea, traveled many long journeys, faced many dangers, rivers, robbers, faced danger of my own people, the Jews, as well as the Gentiles. I've faced the danger in cities and deserts and on the seas. I've faced danger from men who claim to be believers but are not. I've worked hard and long, enduring many sleepless nights. I've been hungry and thirsty, and have often gone without food. I have shivered in the cold without any clothing to keep me warm. Verse 28 is pastoral humor. Because after all of that, he says, and besides, I've got all the burden of all these churches. Now that doesn't mean anything to you, but a pastor reading that just slaps his knee laughing out loud that Paul would put churches in the line of getting beating and stoned and whipped. Maybe he's talking about all of that stuff, but it's probably more likely he's referencing what he's been through lately. So the NLT inserts the word here so that we read everything that has happened to me here, which draws our attention to what he's been going through as he's been imprisoned. And in particular, Paul is likely referencing that he has moved from being under house arrest, which is relatively soft, I mean, you're confined, but you're in a home. Paul goes from being under house arrest to going into a prison while he awaits his trial, which is why he's going to say in the next verse, he's under watch by the palace guard. So he's now no longer in the soft place of a home confinement. Now he finds himself in a dank, dark prison cell. And so Paul can reflect on that and say, now, because of this has happened to me, I know what you're thinking. You got to be thinking, this is a bad deal. I got the short end of the stick. But I'm telling you, God's actually in this. He's clearing the way so that the gospel can be proclaimed. It brings to mind one of the passages that many believers have loved to memorize and quote, Romans 8:28, which declares to us that all things work together for good. Not all things are good, but all things under the sovereign hand of God are woven together so that they bring about good. This is what brings us to the first thing we need to do in order to renew our joy, and that is to gain divine perspective. To see things from God's point of view. Nothing ever catches God by surprise. He sees it all. He's at work in it all. And so God never loses hope. And so when we gain God's perspective, it can renew joy in us. We need, when we talk about divine perspective, we need, listen, 50/20 eyesight. Now, most of us know, you've been to the eye doctor, that perfect eyesight is usually referred to as what? 20/20. But biblically, we need 50/20 eyesight. God's perspective. Let me tell you where I get that. If you know the story of Joseph in the Old Testament, he's a young man that starts his life with a lot of promise. He's favored in his family, but his brothers are jealous of their father's favoritism. So they negotiate a contract to sell him to a human trafficker who then puts him on a pathway to Egypt, where he's sold into slavery in Egypt. Then you follow his story. It goes through all kinds of unexpected twists and turns. He goes into a prison, and from prison, he becomes the vice president of Egypt. His story is mind-blowing. Lots of unexpected twists and turns. And at the end of his life, as he's surveying everything that he's been through, he has clear 50/20 eyesight. He sees divine perspective. Here is Genesis 50:20. Look at this verse. You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. Genesis 50:20. There's your 50/20 eyesight. When you have the sight to see that God is in it all, working all things together for good, it will lift your heart and you'll find some joy because you know you've not been abandoned. You know you're not on your own. God is still at work. Look at the next verse, verse 13. For everyone here, including the whole palace guard, knows, that's the word clear. It's clear to everybody. They know that I am in chains because of Christ. Because of my imprisonment, most of the believers have gained confidence and boldly speak God's message without fear. Now again, Paul is moved from house arrest into a prison cell. And now we know with this reference of the prison guard, the palace guard. This is, in Greek, it's the Praetorian Guard. This is Caesar's elite force. These are the guards that guard Caesar. And so now he's in a position of having this kind of personality around him. These are the Navy SEALs of the day. And so every day, Paul's life is going to be watched over by these Navy SEALs. 24 hours a day, he is anchored to one of them by a chain. Every 4 hours, they change shifts. So at least 6 soldiers a day are on guard with Paul constantly. Paul cannot eat without eating with a guard. He can't sleep without sleeping with a guard right by. He can't go to the restroom without a guard being right by. He can't bathe without a guard being by. He has no privacy. He's constantly around these guards. Now, these guards being Navy SEALs of their day, Caesar, after 12 years of service, would reward them with all kinds of privileged positions across the empire. These are the most trusted guys that he knows. It's these bodyguards, they're around him. I mean, they could easily do away with him, but they don't because they're trustworthy. And so because they're trustworthy, Caesar will send them across the empire after 12 years of service as governors, as provincial leaders, people with high influence positions. Now, these are the guys that are chained to Paul 24 hours a day. Most people would see the inconvenience and gripe. But Paul sees, I got a captive audience. These boys are going nowhere. And these are going to be the most influential people across the empire. And so they hear his exhortation of the gospel. They listen to him as he dictates his letters and hammers out the theology. They hear that apostle when he's on his knees praying, as he says, without ceasing. And the implication is clear that through all of that influence, many of them come to Christ. In fact, a Roman historian writes by AD 116, that there are countless numbers of believers among the Roman military. Christian historians have recognized that probably the greatest missionary force ever deployed was the Roman military. Because as they would carry out their assignments in all parts of the world, those who were being won to Christ would carry the gospel with them and take it to places where Christians couldn't even afford to go. The Roman soldiers were doing mission work all on Caesar's dime. In the 1990s, they unearthed this mosaic at a Roman outpost. In the center of the floor is a Christian symbol. 2 fish symbolizing the miraculous ministry of Jesus to multiply the fish. That's in a Roman outpost, which meant that in all likelihood, that's the floor of a church that Roman soldiers put together to worship Christ. So Paul said, look at it again. I am in chains because of Christ. Because of Christ. 3 words that we read. There are 2 words in Greek, in Christo. There are 3 different ways that we can take what Paul meant by that. One was to say that Paul was saying, I'm in chains for Christ, emphasizing his own devotion. I'm devoted to Christ, and it has therefore put me in this position. Could be that. Paul could be emphasizing his chains to make reference to the cause of Christ, which is the legality of his imprisonment. I'm in prison like because of the cause of Christ. Think of the civil rights movement and how people serve prison sentences, not because of, you know, doing anything wrong, but because of taking a stand for a cause. And so Paul could mean his chains were for a cause, like the civil rights movement. But I think the more likelihood is number 3, where we read because of Christ. These chains are because of Christ, which emphasizes the fact that, listen, Christ is in his chains, which means he is in this, he has a plan, and there is an opportunity in my chains. Now remember, these are soldiers that are chained to Paul who will one day serve in influential positions. Paul could see the possibility that Christ could take his chains and use it for an incredible moment of winning soldiers to Christ who could carry the gospel in their deployment all over the world. And so Paul says, man, I see Christ in my chains. Now, for those of you that are, you know, Bible students, here's a little nugget for you. Some of us know that there's a person reference. Luke is the travel partner of Paul throughout his journeys. Luke wrote the Gospel of Luke and also Acts. Luke addresses both of those letters to a mysterious figure by the name of Theophilus. And there are many historians and theologians who believe Theophilus was a Praetorian guard who was won to Christ and then was dispatched with an important point of service somewhere in the empire. And Luke follows up with him by saying, I have also decided to write a careful account for you, most honorable Theophilus, so you can be certain of the truth of everything you were taught. And so Paul, when he looks at his chains, he sees a difficult situation. It's not easy to be in chains. It's not easy to go from the convenience of home confinement into the darkest dungeon. But when he sees his chains, he sees Christ in it. Because it's an opportunity for God to take his discomfort and do some kind of advance in somebody else's life. And so he sees Christ in his chains. And so the next point of tending joy and renewing joy is to see Christ in our chains. What kind of difficult situations do you find yourself in that it just might be Christ is in those chains? This may sound awkward, but some of you might look at your marriage as some chains. It's difficult. Not exactly what you signed up for. But can you see Christ in your chains? Maybe vocationally, a job, not what you're hoping for, but can you see Christ in your chains? Your health circumstance is unwanted, but can you see Christ in your chains? Your daughter-in-law is not the one you picked out, but can you see Christ in your chains? Because when you can, it renews your joy. Peter O'Brien is not a name I would expect you to know, but Peter O'Brien was a missionary for several years in India. He, in his later years, became a seminary professor and a writer, an author who influenced literally millions of people. But his story begins in a household where there was not faith. His mom nor his dad was a person of faith. And his mom, however, was influenced by a neighbor who had an incurable disease, but yet never kind of was a burden to anybody in the neighborhood. And every time she interacted with him, she just knew that how in the world can you be that joyful and be that sick? And over a period of time, Peter O'Brien's mother was influenced by the impact of Christ in her neighbor's life, and she became a follower of Jesus. Her husband became a follower of Jesus, and Peter became a follower of Jesus. Literally, millions of people impacted because one woman saw her chains and Christ in her chains. What difficult circumstance are you already in that you have the opportunity to see it differently? You can see Christ in your chains. If you do, it'll renew your joy. Here's the third, last one. Is we got to learn to live our own life. Another thing that will bring joy, renew joy, is live your own life. Sometimes people say, you do you. You follow the path that God has for you. That will renew your joy. Look at verse 15. It's true that some are preaching out of jealousy and rivalry. Clement of Alexandria wrote in AD 90 that Paul put up with a whole lot of jealousy in his lifetime. It's hard for us to imagine anybody being like unkind to the Apostle Paul, and yet he faced a lot of people that were jealous and they were envious of his life. Maybe not envious of his jail time, but they envied his influence. And there were people that wanted Paul's life. I want to be Paul. And so out of jealousy and envy and rivalry, they created strife. Others preach about Christ with pure motives. Paul says they preach because they love me. For they know I have been appointed to defend the gospel. The word appointed means this is my calling. This is the life path that God has for me. I have the opportunity, listen, to explain the gospel to very high-ranking Roman citizens. Paul's going to present the gospel to Nero. There are people that saw his influential life and said, I want that. I want to be Paul. But that was Paul's calling. Verse 17. Those others, the jealous ones, they do not have pure motives as they preach about Christ. They preach with selfish ambition, not sincerely, intending to make my chains more painful to me. But that doesn't matter. Whether their motives are false or genuine, the message about Christ is preached either way, so I rejoice and I will continue to rejoice. There's something about knowing the life that God has for you, and you do you. You just live your life, and you follow the path God has for you, and it renews joy. But when you start looking over your shoulder, or you start scanning Facebook, and you see the life that somebody else is living, and you think to yourself, I am envious of that. I want that life. The more you start wanting to live somebody else's life, the more joy is just going to be milked out of you. You got to learn to do you. To follow the appointed path that God has for you. To live your life. I'm telling you, jealousy and comparisons and trying to measure up, man, those are the enemies of joy. You got to learn to live your life. Several years ago, watching on some obscure channel, there was like this little short video of, it's called The Window. It was two people in a hospital room, and there was a guy by the window and there was a guy by the door. The guy by the window would look out the window, and both of them were confined to their hospital beds, but the guy would look out the window and he would just talk about all that he would see. Oh, I see, you know, there's a lake and there's people walking by the park, and there's, you know, there's somebody flying a kite, and he would just kind of go on and on and on. And the guy laying over by the doorway who could not see any of those things would hear them and imagine the scene. At first, it was kind of like a pleasant thing because he couldn't see it, but at least he could see it in his mind. But then he started getting jealous of the life that guy has that he can see out the window. He starts wanting his life. And so one evening, this guy that's by the window starts to like struggle. His airway is blocked or hindered, and he's gurgling, and the guy sitting in the seat, the camera focuses in on his face, like he knows that guy's in trouble. And so it goes from his face to like the clicker, you know, face to the clicker, face to the clicker, and the guy's like looking at the clicker. But he thinks, if that guy passes, I'll get to be by the window. So he don't hit his clicker. Sure enough, the guy passes. And so when they come in and take the gentleman out and change the sheets and everything else, he says, can I be moved over by the window? Well, sure. So they moved him over the window. And he struggles, gets up on one arm, looks out the window. And the camera zooms in to nothing but a wall. There was a building right next door. There was no lake. There were no people walking. There were no kites flowing. And the guy sits back, and you can just see it in the camera work that he cannot believe his jealousy for somebody else's life drove him to that. And I just watched, listen, at how subject we are to want someone else's life. And if you ever got it, it wouldn't be what you wanted anyway. The life that's best is the life God has for you. And the more you do you, just like Paul, this is my appointment. This is what I've been set to do. This is my life plan. I'm not going to fall into the comparison game and measuring up and all of that. I'm going to do what God wants me to do. If you'll just follow your path, it renews joy. I don't want to live with a lot of disappointment. I want my cup filled with a sullen sourness and bitterness and just jealous and wanting what everybody, I want to experience Jesus' joy. Get divine perspective, see Christ in your chains, and come on, man, live your life. That'll bring you joy.